For October the 11th, 2013, we talk about the Valve announcements from a couple weeks ago, Grand Theft Auto 5, and I give my first-hand impressions of the Oculus Rift. Welcome to the 37th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Weissman.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you very much for your patience with us last week as we took the week off. I was in sunny Portland, Oregon for the Portland Retro Games Expo. There for Watch Out for Fireballs, had a table, and we did a live show. I guested on the Retronauts to talk about the launch of the Sega Genesis. And yeah, it was a good time. They called Sega kids trash people, which was pretty fun. To be called a trash person in front of a whole crowd of people. That was good. But it was like an awesome time. So thank you to anybody who's listening to that, who was there. Wish you guys could have been out there, but you know, we're going to, you know, who knows what the future holds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The games we talk about today will one day be retro, and then
it'll
be fitting.
Yeah. So that's
actually
really
what we're going to do is sometime just completely rebrand the level as, you know, the new Watch Out for Fireball.
Yeah, switch places. Yeah.
No, we should go and pretend like we've warped back from the future and be like, oh my god. Well, while we're here, why don't we talk about some of our favorite retro games?
Why not? Yeah. I think that'd be the way to do it. Mm-hmm. So what do we have in store for you? We're going to do the brief. We're going to do the grind, and then we're going to quit because I have a rip-roaring ear infection, as you can probably tell from my silky, smooth, gravelly voice, even more so than usual. So I'm in tremendous pain, so no multiplayer. But yeah, let's see where this takes us. So it's time for The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world vis-a-vis video games. So guys, does anybody want to volunteer? Otherwise, I have a story.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I will
have exactly three stories. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'm going to do one. Since we were talking about Watch Out for Fireballs, roughly a year ago, we did an episode about Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Fathers, which is an excellent little investigative point-and-click adventure game. Tim Curry voices the main character, takes place in Nolans. Really good time. Well, that game's designer, Jane Jensen, has come out today on Twitter and said that for the 20th anniversary of the first Gabriel Knight game, they are re-releasing it in an HD remake in mid-2014.
Hmm.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So this is being done through her indie studio, Pinkerton Road, which is licensing the game from Activision, who somehow ended up with the license for that after Sierra went underground. Not underground. Yeah, they're waiting for their time to reemerge. No. They're updating it. They're going to release it on like Android, iOS, PC, the whole rigmarole. The bummer for this though. So I mentioned, you know, Tim Curry did the voice acting for the main character Gabriel Knight. They're not going to have him again because it would be too expensive to hire him. This is a decidedly indie production. So that you know, it's a well-written game, but his performance was a huge part of the charm. So he will be missed.
Can't they just use like the original files from his voice?
That's what Jane Jensen said was that they don't have access to those anymore. They were really compressed anyway. You know, in order to fit on the discs. There's a lot of dialogue in the game. Like I think everything is spoken.
Well,
wow. Yeah.
Guess we'll have to go with Nolan North.
I wonder who would be more expensive. Okay, so Tim Curry is an actor of film and screen, or, you know, stage and screen, blah, blah, blah. You know, very prolific guy. But, like, Nolan North is in kind of high demand. I wonder, like, for a VO gig, who would take more?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I always figured that's how Nolan North was so prolific, is no one's paying him. He just kind of shows up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just like he's the engineer unlocks the studio one day and he's just sleeping on the couch. He's like, all right, let's go. He's like,
I go where I am needed.
Like, I just printed out the script. Don't worry, it's fine.
Wherever there's a hero giving commentary to show someone which path to take, I'll be there.
You don't need to call him. He just shows up. Ben knows. Saints Row 4 reference. I'm excited about that, just as I would be excited about any HD remake of a game that I love. I don't know. That's my story.
Monkey Island held up really well, I understand. So it'll be exciting to see, you know, them give the treatment to another classic from that era.
Yeah, and you know, just kind of like from an archival perspective, I'm excited that this stuff being re-released and kept modern means that it'll stay stay in the modern consciousness. However, you know, Sins of the Fathers, in fact, all the Gabriel Knight games are on GOG, so that's about as good as it gets. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that this is going to be missing that the Monkey Island remakes have that is really cool is the instant switching back and forth between the old style visuals and the new style visuals.
Oh, yeah. No, wait, with Monkey Island, they added voice, and they didn't have it originally, right?
Right. So the first two Monkey Island games did not have any voice acting. That came in with Monkey Island 3, The Curse of Monkey Island. So they went back and retrofitted it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. See what I did there, retro? Yeah. So... So that is my story. Who wants to go next?
I have a very short one and a dinky one. Mine is just that Beyond Two Souls came out today.
I almost went and picked it up.
I totally forgot about that game because it had been like overshadowed with Grand Theft Auto V.
So. Yeah. Well, So here's how effective that game's marketing is. Even I have seen marketing for that game.
Yeah. They had it going pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. They've got big name actors in it, Ellen Page and Willem Dafoe. I'm excited about it. Holy shit game of the year. Like I don't have incredibly high hopes, but you vote with your wallet and I want to see that kind of thing more, that cinematic adventure game style thing.
Yeah. It's you just got to go in expecting a grand vision that is a bit scatterbrained and clumsily executed, and you will be perfectly happy.
Yep.
On the other hand, IGN gave it a 6 out of 10, and I was under the impression that you got a 7 out of 10 if you murdered someone.
It's kind of been all over the map. So I was watching reviews as they popped up today, and like Joystick gave it like a 2.5 out of 5, which isn't the same as like a 5 out of 10. Star systems are different than point systems. Polygon, Justin McElroy, reviewed it and gave it an 8 out of 10. And I'm perfectly comfortable spending money on something that is a 6 to 8 out of 10. You know.
I'm normally, if it's 8 out of 10, I probably shouldn't buy it. If it's anything lower, usually it's not even on the radar.
I think you miss a lot of interesting stuff if you just do it that way.
Definitely. I mean, in an ideal world, definitely.
Yeah.
I think, novelty buys you a lot of grace. It's just the question of how many hours do you want to sink into something novel?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean... Given that it'll probably be like an 8 to 10 hour game, I mean, I feel like that is, you know, over the course of like a month, that is a perfectly reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I sound like I'm defending it when I'm, and as a matter of fact, not. But that is, scores are weird. I think scores are weird. Ben, are you going to pick it up?
I don't know. As I said, I had totally forgotten about this game until today when I saw that it had came out.
Yeah,
so
I try not to spoil myself. You know, if I saw something that looked kind of hinky in the review text, I went away. But some of the stuff that they're talking about seems really, really interesting in terms of how they use the main character's special abilities.
How much are they selling it for?
About $60. I mean, you know, the regular console game new price.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that was my story as well. Just
sorry, dude.
That's fine.
No, it's perfectly fine. Just you know, going with the right expectations. Like, you're not playing this game for polish or, you know, excellent execution. You're playing it for the ambition behind it. So,
well, how about you, Dennis? I mean, you know, like, just I know at least the three of us, you know, Ben, you and I, all really liked Heavy Rain. I mean, you know, how about you?
Heavy Rain means that this deserves a try.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it other than that. It's, I love the guy's ambition. I love it because it's unique. It's worth at least a try.
I feel like Heavy Rain kind of puts them in a corner because, like, that sets the bar. So they need to produce a game that's as good or better than that, right?
Yeah. And I think that they're taking the right steps, right? I mean, hiring actual actors to do their stuff. I mean, that was, you know, aside from some, you know, weird hinky stuff with the plot, you know, that was the biggest drawback for me, was just the performances.
French children.
Yeah. Or, you know, or just the weird deliveries and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw some complaints about the writing, but, you know, again, tolerance for various sorts of things. So,
mm-hmm.
I want to see interesting shit. Like, that's my
yeah.
Oh,
go see Gravity.
Yeah,
we haven't talked about the Valve announcements, right? That happened.
Like I said, I have exactly three stories.
Oh, okay, yeah. So when we last left the world of Valve, I think that so they had just announced the existence of SteamOS. Right. Yeah, this is big stuff. So I'm happy that that we're doing this here. So David, why don't you tell us about the Steam Box and the Steam controller?
It's kind of interesting to me because I would say. The Steam Box is predominantly interesting in light of SteamOS.
Mm-hmm.
In that, one, we knew that Steam Box was happening.
Yeah.
But two, the other thing is, if strictly speaking, if Valve's only goal was to try to consoleize PC gaming, Steam Box is probably all they would need.
Right. So do you want me to give like a high level overview for people who
sure,
are listening?
Sure,
just because this was a while ago and you know, they've probably are already heard this. So the idea about the Steam Box is like, hey, let's partner with different vendors and, you know, we'll make one ourselves, but we, you know, provide this architecture for these Linux boxes that can be put out preloaded with SteamOS. The idea being that, you know, ideally, you know, this thing would be beefy enough to run stuff on its own. It would just be a console box that you could run, you know, Linux compatible games on. And they gave some kind of number of what games were compatible with that, which would probably, you know, just go up in the future. And they're going to release those. But if, you know, if something can't run on that, then it can stream over the network. Do like a local on live kind of thing where it brings video over to your main, you know, to your television. The idea being like, hey, I've got my Mac in my office, but I want to play this game in my living room. I don't want to lug my Mac out to my living room, so I just use this Apple TV like thing. So you right. know, you can buy a shitty computer in the Steam Box and use that to pipe games over from your good computer in a no muss, no fuss kind of way using the big picture mode.
It's the Steam Stream.
Kind of, yeah. It's the stream. There we go. Yeah, I don't even know. But it's pretty cool, and they released the specs. Like the specs for the ones that they're sending out to beta testers. Really, like, good. Like 16 gigs RAM, 2 gigabyte video RAM. Like, I don't know if that'll be top of the line model or what, but the idea that they're partnering with vendors and saying, yeah, anybody can make and sell a Steam Box. Like, this is X model of machine.
It's open hardware.
Yeah, it's open hardware. I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that I'm assuming their goal is to capitalize on that in terms of the price.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of interesting because, you know, you could probably, you know, what are consoles looking like they're going to cost this this cycle?
400 to 500 is what they're at now.
And I would say 500, you could probably get like a fairly good quality gaming computer right now, gaming laptop in particular.
I've priced them out. Like a desktop is definitely the cheaper way to go, and to like hit the recommended specs for like a game that's like 2 years old, like say The Witcher 2. It's still pretty beefy. Like you've got to hit like $750.
Really? I'd have to look at that. That would be extremely surprising to me.
Yeah. And that's just that's as of like January of this year when I was like looking around at that stuff. So.
Yeah, because I mean, like, you know, the things I was looking at, about 500 to 600 for like an i5 or i7 processor.
Mm-hmm.
Something with that, a decent video card, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, regardless, for about, I would say for about the price of a console, you could probably, get a gaming quality, a gaming quality computer.
Yeah.
I think that'd be very doable.
And like, what's great about that is, you get a company like Steam or if some other, hardware manufacturer starts like pumping these things out and they're standardized, like, I'm going to get the Steam Box 2014. Okay. This is the one that I'm going to get. If there are three tiers, they're going to know that there will be demand for X number of that. And then you get economies of scale. Right.
Right.
And
exactly.
You get economies of scale, and it's commoditized to a certain extent because let's be frank here. PC, hardware is commoditized. It's kind of like a race to the bottom, and everybody's slashing their margins. So I get the sense that buying this prepackaged version of it will be actually cheaper than if you got a similarly powered machine from somewhere else.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that is one thing I would kind of predict is I think you'll see a lot of interesting side uses for them, the same way you saw with the Kinect.
Well, they're talking about how they're going to be like media streaming servers too.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But really, for me, the most interesting part of this was the Steam OS.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. Is there anything new that's come out of it?
Did we talk? Last time.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, we did. I know it's been a while, but the last episode we did was the week that they were doing these announcements.
Okay.
And we record on Tuesdays. They had already announced DMOS on Monday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Memory lasts exactly 1.5 weeks. So.
Just saying, ran out of memory.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think the most interesting thing is that desktops or personal computers are the only market segment where Linux is not the most popular operating system.
Right, right. Because Linux, well, Unix underpins both iOS and Android. Right.
Yeah. So
it's also
Android is
on
Linux,
regular devices. If that's the case, like Mac OS X, has a Unix core as well.
Oh, see, I'm talking strictly Linux,
Linux.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like the most popular mobile operating system is Android, which is Linux.
No true Scotsman would use Linux.
By the way, can we start a side podcast called Strictly Linux?
servers, embedded devices. So I think this is interesting in some degree in that particularly for Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft has two market segments, and this is kind of potentially Steam attacking both of them at once.
Yeah, kind of.
Microsoft is already basically doing everything they can to drive themselves out of business.
Yeah.
I think this is really interesting to me in that light. But then the other thing is, what do you guys think of the controller?
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want me to give the high level of that as well?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
So Valve announced along with this, you know, like, hey, the input problem is actually like a really really huge deal. If we're going to be in the living room, we don't want people to sit there with a, you know, keyboard in their lap. It gets real difficult. Not everybody likes using a you know, a 360 controller, although that kind of is the de facto gamepad solution, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they came out with this thing. I need to pull up a picture of it so I can actually give a good description. We'll put it in the show notes as well. That has...
It's like if you left a controller out in the sun and the joysticks melted down.
Kind of, yeah. So it has these like two concave... it's like reverse nipples inverted nipples for like, you know, in the place of, so think about a PS3 controller where the D-pad and the face buttons are that are touch sensitive. They are both touch sensitive and they have this very strange electromagnetic haptic feedback system, so that as you kind of like rub over them, apparently there's like there's this localized rumble that gives you feedback about what you're actually doing. There's like a touch screen in the middle of it, and there are various buttons on the front and back, triggers and things. And the idea is that they're working to make this have the full functionality of mouse and keyboard.
Right, and as I understand it, the idea is that the two pads are basically supposed to operate the same as trackballs.
Yeah, yeah. Trackballs are trackpads in place of the analog sticks.
Right.
This I think it's going to be purely a cosmetic difference. Like, I think people are going to wind up using it the exact same way as they use all the other game pads, and
you're going to hold it with two hands.
See,
yeah.
I think that'd be interesting, though, because I would say if that is the case, then I think this product is dead in the water.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Oh, because PC gaming basically requires, the games that you would want to play on PC are games that you have to have the superior precision of a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what they're pitching it for basically is with this product, you'll be able to play specifically real-time strategy games and like menu-heavy MMOs.
Yeah, be able to play them as precisely as you would on a computer.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know it's interesting to me. I'm taking a class right now on user interfaces, and one of the big things is the idea of where they call it like direct manipulation. The idea that the most successful interfaces are ones where what you do directly mimics what you physically do to communicate with the interface directly mimics what you're trying to do. So the idea that, you know, pushing an up arrow is more direct than like typing in the command up.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you know, dragging something to the recycle bin, things like that. And I think what it comes down to is if you look at most games that are only ever successful on the PC, there are things like real-time strategy and menu heavy games where the point of the game is you're pointing, whereas if you look at games that people use the 360 controller on, like, you know, the Batman games, they're games where you're indicating directions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the fundamental difference that they're trying to bridge. And I think the trackpad's an interesting way to do it because I feel like it kind of does both.
Mm-hmm.
Have they given any sort of hands-on demos with this yet?
Yeah. So far, the demos have been fairly positive.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. what they've said is that the haptic feedback, apparently, you know, people really like that, and they say it kind of serves to take care of the problems like we've talked about with the, like on iOS games where they call them like the virtual buttons.
Yeah, yeah. The
where they're saying controls. The haptic feedback will basically kind of remind you if you're, you know, sliding off the controls or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of, and they said, you know, that it also sort of, you know, provides feedback to give more of the feeling of like, so that when you swipe across it to spin the trackball, so that you can kind of gauge how much virtual velocity you're adding to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like if it worked, it could be huge. If it doesn't work, I feel like, I don't know, this game, the product's kind of irrelevant.
See, I think you're going to get a spate of really interesting launch games that take full advantage of it, and then 90% of it is going to be people just trying to get it to function as close to another controller as possible.
Which,
oh, and that's what they've, as I read it, that's what they've said, is the point of this is to function as close to a mouse and keyboard as possible.
Yeah. Well, like, and like, as a failure state, like, oh, this thing works like a gamepad but better and closer to the thing that a bunch of people reserve, that is not a terrible fail state.
No, that's a, yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
I feel we would disagree on that point, but that is,
well, no, but like, oh, okay, so all right, glorious PC Master Race bullshit aside.
Okay.
Glorious PC Master Race bullshit aside. Taking a step forward in human-computer interface in a way that is not strictly touchscreen or not shouting at your fucking TV from across the living room. That is a really positive thing to me.
Which I find those go together. Whenever I'm trying to use the touchscreen interface, I end up shouting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, it just kind of like this just seems so fucking smart. And if there's a company that can get people to like rally around this, you know, like it's going to be Valve, because they control the means of production. Right, they control and so think about when they said, "Hey guys, we're doing trading cards," and then everybody started rushing to do trading cards because it was good for them, because people wanted to buy their shit. I understand that trading cards are just like the most asinine thing in the entire world. However, you know, it did sell games.
Hey, I made $1 on trading cards already.
can I diverge into trading cards real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Apparently trading cards, you know, once you get all the drops for a game, you know, you can get, say, if the game has 8 cards, it'll drop 4 of them as you play.
Right.
After that point, you then get where there's a random chance for you to get a booster pack that contains a couple cards.
Mm-hmm.
However, your chance of getting a booster pack is determined by your Steam level, which is determined by how many sets of cards you've collected.
Huh.
For the people who are some of the medium high, you know, some of the, say, like level 10, level 20, mm-hmm. Steam level, apparently are saying, you know, they get about one booster pack a week, which is, you know, about $1 worth of cards a week. And so basically it's created, I maintain that Valve has effectively created a pyramid scheme where everyone is trying to get the cards in order to get their Steam level up so that they can sell the cards. However, the people they're selling the cards to are the people below them. They're trying to get their Steam level up so that they can sell to the new people below them, and so on. So mm-hmm. effectively Steam has become like virtual Amway.
Kind of. Yeah. I don't know. So just but back on the, you know, Steam's retrospective announcements, you know, I don't know that this has a huge effect on you, David, because you're already, you know, whole hog into the PC gaming kind of lifestyle.
No. Honestly, probably the most ironic thing, not to completely contradict myself, but probably the most the biggest thing on the controller for me is just the fact that there's a lot of particularly action and driving games I haven't played because they're generally only good with controllers and I don't have a 360 controller.
Right.
But I think the biggest news story is SteamOS, mainly to the degree that if it could potentially get Linux to be mainstream, that could be huge. Not just even outside of gaming.
Yeah. It's so smart to put that streaming thing in.
Yeah.
Continuing that train of thought, I kind of want to ask, you know, Dennis and Ben, would this make if a reasonably priced Steam box came out, would that make you consider getting that in lieu of, you know, getting like a gaming PC or a console or something like that?
Yeah, dude, I'm down to DTS.
What?
Down to Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're kind of due for a new computer, right?
Your
computer's working fine. I'm not going to be like, oh man, like you haven't updated your computer in 3 years. Blah. What a piece of
Here's a shame if something happened to that computer, son.
Easy, wise guy. I bought the Humble Indie Bundle from like 2 weeks ago. Like the one with the good games on it.
Uh-huh.
But I can't run any of them. But I bought it because one day I knew I couldn't run them when I bought it. But I bought it just because I knew that one day I would want to play those games. So
yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I do that too. Like, you know, The Witcher 2 came out. My computer can't run it, but it was like $7, and I was like, I'm going to want to buy that eventually. you know, yeah. I don't know. How about you, Dennis? I mean, I know that you just got your MacBook.
Yeah. So maybe it's just because that is still fresh for me, but I don't think it would. I mean, I've got a PS3 for all the AAA titles that I want to play. All the indie stuff that I can't get, on PS3 is low enough fi that I can run it on my Mac.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I haven't really tested the powers of this thing. I don't know how nice a game I can play on it, but certainly everything that I've been interested in that I could only get through Steam, I've been able to play.
Right.
So there's no incentive for me to add another box to do what the two machines I have already do pretty well.
Right.
And I don't find myself inconvenienced enough by, you know, changing screens or whatever to get the benefit from that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, with your current box, it could become a Steam box at any time for free.
Which one is that?
Yeah.
The Mac.
Oh, isn't it already a Steam box because it has Steam?
No, I mean, at any time you could, well, at any time after it's released, you could install Mac OS, or rather Steam OS.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
You could dual boot it, but there's not really too much of a reason to do that. Because you can already run big picture mode from your MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, earlier this year, I was thinking about getting putting together a gaming PC. However, I knew that this was coming down the pike and I wanted to see what it looked like. I'm intrigued by it. You know, I like that this is console-ifying it to a certain degree, taking a little bit of the guesswork out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's neat. I just need to see pricing. The specs on the box that they announced, like put out, really, really tempting, but I can't see that costing less than $1,000. Who knows? But yeah, thank you for reminding me of that, David, because I forgot that we hadn't talked about it yet.
You were welcome.
I reminded you about that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Credit where credit is due.
Silence.
At what point? I forget.
I said, hey, didn't we not talk about the Valve announcement?
Oh, okay, yeah. And it was David who had brought the stories.
Yeah, dude.
Okay, cool. No, no. So thank you, everybody. I was getting ready to just steamroll past it.
I did nothing to facilitate that conversation, so.
Attaboy.
The grind. Like a sausage.
Okay.
Hang Sorry. In there. I just have this image of Cole, like, you know, blacking out, seeing spots, fading in and out as he's facilitating the, or, you know, doing the podcast.
No, it just hurts to swallow. And also, my hearing is cut in half and the sharp jutting pain in my right ear. Yeah.
I like the idea of Cole doing segues while he's blacked out.
Like Will Ferrell in Old School. Yeah. Okay.
It's a lot better than driving a Segway while you're blacked out.
Well, you can't fall over. You just go real fast in whatever direction you decide to fall. Yeah. All right.
So speaking of Segways, that's a missed opportunity in Grand Theft Auto V is that they did not have a Segway in it.
No?
Ooh, DLC. That needs to be DLC.
You could control it with a six-axis.
By the way, that was a segue.
Whoa. Mind blown.
Okay, can I introduce the segment?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. It's time for the grind where we talk about games we've been playing. Ben, you seem to be champing at the bit, so talk about your segues.
Yeah, okay. Champing? So, yeah, the first one was the segue.
Yes,
second
champing.
Segue, not really a segue, but like a callback to you talking about functionality being screaming at the screen. And Grand Theft Auto Online, which I will talk about in depth, one of the features is when you rob a store, if you scream into your microphone, the person will put stuff in the bag quicker.
So, I kind of like that. That's kind of cool.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of like screaming at your screen, GTA Online is horribly broken and randomly loses your characters.
That's pretty cool.
So have you had the problems with it that everyone else has had?
No, but I only played it for like an hour, so
limited
interaction, I suppose. But I mean, so far my experience has been good. You just drop in and out. You see other characters. If you are an asshole to people, you get put in servers with other assholes.
If you're an asshole to people, you get matched up with 4chan players.
Yeah.
But it's a really nice system. I mean, it's the open world, but you basically go to different spots and they'll have different rounds of some event. So the event might be racing, it might be a death match, but you'll load up and then you'll, you know, play some sort of round based game and then you'll pop back out into the open world and walk around and there are other people there. So it's pretty cool. And what's nice too is you can switch between story mode and the GTA Online pretty easily. And in fact, like when it's loading the game, when you press X, you can toggle which one it loads. So you can choose which mode to go into. So
nice.
Pretty nifty.
Yeah, that's real nice that they're codifying some of that. I mean, you know, a lot of it would probably arise naturally as people do it, but I mean, giving you the actual rule sets to back it up helps you discover new things to do, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I will play it more in depth later. But yeah, so far so good. I'm currently approaching the end of the storyline, I think. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how far off it is still yet. But that's just what I'm trying to work towards now.
Right.
So.
I'm really excited about GTA Online. That would be probably the only reason I'd buy the game. And I don't know, I really liked All Points Bulletin. And this kind of looks like a similar idea.
Okay, yeah. Right on.
I don't know that I have any real questions about it. It just looks real neat. How is the character customization? I mean, Dennis mentioned that that people losing their characters was kind of a problem. Is that?
Yeah, it seems like that would be. Yeah.
Is there persistence? Is it just a matter of like, oh, I've got to like make this guy again? Like, if you lose him, do you lose any kind of progress? Like what do you actually lose when you lose your character?
I haven't lost a person yet, so I don't know what that entails.
Can you level up your person, though?
Yes. Yeah, there's a leveling up system. Basically, the more events that you go into, the more experience you get and you level up. And then that also gives you money, and you use – money is basically the commodity you're going after. So the character you have in the GTA Online –
Not really.
Yeah. The character you have in GTA Online is like a fourth character. So when you play the storyline, you kind of switch in between three main characters, and this is like a fourth one. He has his own set of money, so you can buy I don't know if you can buy properties, but you can buy like clothes and cars, and I think you can get like garages and stuff.
Okay.
And so you basically play to – accumulate money to buy things, so it's kind of like, I guess, life. So yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Have you been playing anything else, Ben?
No.
I see.
No. I mean, as I said, nothing has really been on my radar at all outside of this. So once I beat it, I'll probably try and do other things.
Yeah.
So
when does Arkham Origins come out?
I don't know, but I'm not too excited about that one because it's not the same developers.
Yeah,
so
we'll see how long that holds.
Oh, come on!
No.
I'm a man
just,
of principle.
I know you're a man of principle, but you also like Batman.
That's true too. we'll see which principle
you're a man
moves
of principle
out. Yeah,
likes Batman.
Yeah. Well, I would think that liking Batman is something approaching a principle, right?
Yeah,
maybe.
I agree.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm kind of going down a rabbit hole here. You guys, help.
Hero or a vigilante, whatever. Yeah.
Oh man, how about you, David?
I'm trying to think. I've been playing a good deal of Payday 2, but I can't think what the last thing I said is. I finally got C4.
Okay.
Which basically allows you to normally you have to drill into like any safes you find, but with C4 you can simply blow them open.
Okay.
And it's kind of interesting cuz like at least like one of the missions like I can now be by myself on the most difficult difficulty and escape before the cops even arrive.
Huh.
So, like, to a large degree, like, the entire point of that ability is to do that.
So C4 is, like, the easy button?
See, it's, like, I would say, like, overall, there's four classes. Three of them get a new way to open certain types of saves. One of them gets a electric saw. One of them gets this like hacking device, and then one of them gets C4. Mm-hmm. And they each have slightly different uses. And I would say, on the whole, the C4 is probably the least useful. Hmm. However, on this one level, it is incredibly useful. And one of the things about the game is the way you get unlocks for your weapon is every time you beat a heist, you have a chance of unlocking a attachment for your gun. So there's, depending on what you're trying to do, it can be in your advantage to complete as many heists as possible.
Hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. The game continues to be fun. There's some crazy, some crazy things you did. I did a mission where you're a Republican senator hires you to steal a fusion generator in order to help preserve the oil lobby. But I think I'd said that the game kind of bothered me some. I think I zeroed in on what it is. I think it's the fact that the dialogue doesn't match up with what you're doing.
Okay.
In that, like, a lot of the dialogue, particularly of your controller, like, he's just written as this incredibly nice guy.
Huh.
you know, is very much like, you know, if you like lose a mission, he's like, you know, he's always like, oh, that was my bad. You know, I didn't plan enough, you know, that sort of thing, you know, or
stupid.
Yeah, or, you know, just, you know, very supportive, or like when you beat the fusion mission, you know, his response is, you know, oh, well, I guess we don't get fusion, but at least we get to keep driving our cool gas guzzlers. I mean, I love my, you know, Firebird. Like, just the dialogue is much too, like, lighthearted and silly for the fact that you're just mass murdering people.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's the thing. It's continuing to be crazy shooting people game.
And it doesn't like, you know, use that disparity to its advantage, like a Grand Theft Auto or, you know, like a Hotline Miami would?
Yeah, I feel like I would compare it, I don't know, the game in my mind, mainly because this is the main one in that kind of comparable genre I've played, is Saints Row. And I feel like the difference is Saints Row is obviously, like, meant to be so over the top that it's just, you know, it's kind of meant to be so over the top that you ignore the awful things your character's doing, if that's makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously parody or, you know, kind of hyperbole.
Mm-hmm. It's
whereas
clear that
this
it's not
one
meant to
just
be taken
comes
seriously.
Across this like weird writing.
Gotcha.
So, the other thing I've been playing actually is I had downloaded but never played Neverwinter.
The MMO.
Yeah, it's a new MMO that's based on a 4th edition rule set. And I would say it's actually really, really good. You know, it does a lot of really interesting design choices. It's the entire game, at least so far, takes place inside Neverwinter, which is basically in D&D world is just one of the major cities.
Yeah, in the Forgotten Realms.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, it's free to play, and they kind of use that as a way to not have to design a whole bunch of, like, open worlds that they would have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, most, you know, it kind of does the City of Heroes thing where all of the missions generally are instanced. Because it'll be like, oh, you're going into this, you know, like, gang headquarters, or you're going into the sewers, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that I feel like that's kind of cool. It's much more, tries to do kind of a third-person action, third-person action thing. So, you know, it's kind of much less real-time, or rather much less, like, turn-based, and much more like a little bit of a Devil May Cry thing.
Yeah.
I mean, not nearly that much, but, you know, kind of is that.
Action-based.
And
yeah.
You don't regenerate health.
Ever?
Well, you basically, resting by a campfire heals you. But within a mission, there will generally be, like, a campfire right at the beginning and a campfire right before the boss. But other than that, it's kind of an endurance thing, you know, Dungeons & Dragons style.
Right.
So, you know, you can bring healing potions with you, and that's a big part of the gameplay. But you do have to really conserve your health. So it's sort of almost, you know, you're a little bit like how Dark Souls plays
right.
out. But then the writing, the one thing I feel like World of Warcraft never got was good writing in terms of actually having storyline.
Really?
Well, in terms of, you know, the quests in World of Warcraft, you know, a lot of them would be interesting, but they, generally speaking, there wasn't really. They never bought into the whole, like, let's actually have, like, a primary storyline from the start of the game to the end of the game.
define start of the game to the end of the game, because like from what I understood, like the each of the expansions had its own like arc that it brought, right?
But the thing is, like, all of them, these were things that were happening in the world. Your character was never the hero.
Right.
And, like, they even said that. Like, that was their design philosophy. Your character is some adventure. He is not the adventure.
Yeah, but, like, how do you do that when you have, you know, millions of people, when you have millions of potential heroes?
Yeah, you just write it as if you're the only one.
Huh.
So I know it's just, you know, just the writing is different. So like the basic plot of the game is that there's a massive volcanic eruption and Neverwinter was wiped out and kind of became this sort of, you know, like, I don't know, Lord of the Flies type area.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, this noble from another...
David?
Yeah, basically a guy's coming in and is, you know, claiming, you know, has set himself as the new leader of Neverwinter, is trying to, you know, make the city safe again, you know, that sort of thing. And sort of the tension between him trying to extend the rule of law throughout the city versus the various factions that view him as a legitimate heir to the throne.
Okay.
And so the game actually follows this storyline. So, for example, the very first kind of arc is just, you know, one of the rebel factions basically stealing the crown of Neverwinter, which, you know, has, you know, symbolic importance. And so it's this, you know, this long series of missions where you're trying to track this crown down. And so it kind of gives a cohesive story.
Okay.
But and then this one last thing. The other interesting thing they do is it's actually possible for players to create their own quests and dungeons.
Oh, so, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I haven't directly gone into this, but as far as I can see, basically you use the actual dungeon like maps that are used for other parts of the storyline. But then you can add your own, you know, plot and stuff like that. And apparently, you know, they count. You get experience from them. There's kind of a little big planet-esque where they have, like, the top 10 highest rating or, you know, chosen by the developers, stuff like that.
That's good.
So, yeah. So I haven't gotten into that, but that seems potentially exciting.
Hmm.
So, good stuff.
Nice. Yeah, like let me know more about it as you continue to explore it.
Definitely.
Because yeah. It does seem interesting.
And yeah, maybe the stupidest question of the night. Does this tie with the Neverwinter Nights series of games or game?
Only to the degree that they're set at the same location, although a large number of years apart. I don't think there's any consistent consistent, like, you know, direct parallels to the story or any developers or anything like that. No. And it's actually kind of funny because apparently Forgotten Realms relatively recently has just, like, massively changed. They like killed off most of the pantheon and have like cataclysmed most of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually very little similarity left.
Right. Right.
Cool.
Actually, can I call out there is one other feature actually I like, and I feel like it was a really smart thing to do, is that if you want to play as a the lawful good, or rather chaotic good drow that, you know, escaped the Underdark City and, you know, is trying to, you know, prove that not all drows are evil,
mm-hmm.
you have to buy the, like, $119 founder package or whatever.
Yeah, that's probably a really good idea.
Yeah. So I really enjoy that.
Yeah. God, playing EverQuest, like how many variations of that you saw, just like people who would just name their character Drizzt with like 17 Z's. It's like, just come the fuck on, dude.
Where's the originality?
That's something I actually wanted to know. It was never clear to me the degree to which that was actually recognized in the Forgotten Realms, like, canon. Because, like for example, I know at some point, there was a deity that was, like, the patron deity of chaotic good drow.
Huh.
And, like, so it was never clear to me to what degree, like, they officially recognized the fact that everyone who plays a dark elf plays that storyline.
Huh. I don't know.
I have no idea what the hell we're referencing. So
it's Neverwinter Nights, or just a Forgotten Realms book series starring Drizzt, a good dark elf, which is rare. You know, just kind of like, oh, I want to have a like a gritty evil character that has like a redemption story. Blah. Let's do this.
A good dark elf is hard to find.
Sort of became in the same way that like Watchmen was like a really creative instance of someone being like, hey, let's explore like Shades of Grey heroes. This was at the time a fairly creative instance of like, you know, that storyline, you know, taking one of these stereotypically evil fantasy races and, you know, playing, you know, somewhere did that. The problem is in the same way that then Watchmen spawned a crap ton of just crappy, you know, anti-heroes, this then spawned, like, you know, a full third of the fantasy books are basically that now.
Right. Can I take a moment to comment on how hilarious it is that you called Rorschach a Shade of Grey hero? Isn't his entire point that he's black and white? Yeah, I'm not being serious.
A wise man once said, you tend to become what you most hate.
Oh, you know. Payday 2 and Neverwinter. Anything else, David?
No, that's been the most of it. Yeah. Cool.
So I'll go ahead and do mine because because of my travels over the past 2 weeks, I have not been able to play too much, but I did play two pretty interesting things at PRGE. I want to talk about. So the cool thing, you know, that's like happening there is that, you know, like indie developers are starting to show up. So even though they are not, strictly, you know, retro, they're, you know, a lot of indie games are retro informed. And it's, you know, just, it's good that they're making an appearance at these small regional things.
There's the in for the level.
What's that?
So there's the in for the level.
Oh yeah. There we go. so like there's a group called the Portland Independent Game something S, the like Pig Squad, or the Portland Independent Game Squad, which is like, hey, you know, let's form this collective of anybody around here who wants to make a game, and we'll provide a support network, right? So super cool. And I played a game that, people have been raving about for a good long while. You know, Gary from Watch Out for Fireballs, it's popped up on a couple of blogs here and there, and it's called Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is a rhythm roguelike.
Oh, right. I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So picture like an 8-bit computer, graphic style, pixel art. And you know, it's a top down grid based, you know, it's a roguelike, you know, so think like NetHack with a really nice looking skin on it. Except everything moves on the beat of whatever song is playing, and you get points and you get more treasure if you do your movements and attacks to the beats. So different kinds of monsters will move in different patterns, meaning that, you know, you have to approach things in a specific way, you know, in order to kind of like maximize your, you know, your combat potential, take the least damage and get the most treasure, things like that. They only had a couple of levels that were like in finished state, but it's really, really cool. Like,
that
you
sounds
know,
awesome.
Yeah, and so they've got this functionality planned where they've got this soundtrack that you buy the game and the soundtrack together, and the music that I heard was really good. But you can bring your own music in if you want to.
Nice.
The developers come out and said, like, hey, you know, the optimal BPM is between 150 and 180, you know, beats. So, you know, like that is about the speed of song you want to play. They cited like Thriller being really, really good one to, you know, to play it to. I can just imagine that being a good time, you know, playing that to various other game soundtracks. Also, there's going to be some joker who puts like who puts up a YouTube of like a John Cage song, like, you know, 4:33, the enemy is all standing still. You know, aren't I so clever? I'm an internet person.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, the idea of like choosing your difficulty based on what song you're listening to.
Yeah. But yeah, it's super cool. I mean, I'm sure that there's videos and there might be a demo coming out soon. You can like pre-purchase it. I think it's about a couple months out. Yeah, I was very happy to get a chance to play that. Additionally, the Behemoth was there. That's the developer behind Castle Crashers, Alien Hominid, Battle Blocks Theater.
Oh, I saw a picture of his arcade case for Castle Crashers.
Yeah, that is super cool. And it's like really appropriate. So I stopped and I played that briefly. Like a nice, like big screen with the four joysticks up and buttons. Real cool. I mean, we've talked about Castle Crashers at length. I think that a lot of people have, you know, played it, know about it. But yeah, that seems like the optimal experience. Like, you know, that's the way you're supposed to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then finally, I got a chance to use an Oculus Rift.
Hey.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. So it was the only thing that I waited in line for at the entire convention. I waited for about 20 minutes to use it, and decided to risk getting both head lice and pink eye by slapping this thing on my face. But yeah, it's neat.
What did you play?
So Minecraft. They had a Minecraft mod installed. Huh. And you know, when you're waiting in line at this thing, I forget this company, they sell like retro game hardware for like, you know, of like 4-in-1 systems. Actually, I have their bag right here. It's Hyperkin was the company that was there. They have nothing to do with Oculus Rift except they wanted to bring their dev kit to show to people. And so when you're standing there, you can see on their laptop like what the person in the game is seeing. You know, it's the left eye and then the right eye. And like most of it was like teenagers and like kids who were in there, and they were playing Minecraft in creative mode, and all they were doing was like rising way up above the world and then just dropping, rising way up above the world and then dropping. And it's like
target market ravers,
I suppose. And it was like, you know, like you guys aren't actually doing anything interesting with this, you know,
doing it wrong.
Kind of, they're doing it wrong, and so you're enjoying this technology wrong, you guys. Stop it! You're wasting my time. But yes, I slapped it on. So I've scoffed at the Oculus Rift before, but mostly because of the media coverage for it. I've thought about doing a jokey blog post on the site, which was just a photo of Oculus Rift featured on Oculus Rift or ported for Oculus Rift. You know, just because every fucking day on Joystick or whatever, you see a story that's like, blah, 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 it gets Oculus Rift support. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's a huge publicity grab, isn't it? It's super neat, like the technology. So, a couple of things here, the screen resolution of what I saw was real, real low, Windows 95, Windows 98, like 1280.
You do realize you were playing Minecraft, right? That's all they've got.
Well, no. But like even in
everything was so blocky.
God damn it. No, but like just like seeing jaggies along the side of the screen because you're playing it in 12, you know, to like 1280 by 748 or whatever. Mm. Like whatever it is. And I confirmed that the dev kit resolution is much lower than what the consumer version will be. The consumer version will be 1080p. But yeah, that was kind of a bummer. Yeah, I put it on. I was like, wow, that actually looks like really blurry. And that's because it's so low resolution. You know, like Minecraft, you know, even though it's kind of like, oh, the textures are only, you know, 16 by 16, the actual geometry is incredibly, like, beautiful, you know, especially if you can see stuff expanding out, you know, really far. You know, resolution makes a big difference in that. But yeah, so that's kind of a negative side. On the plus side, like the head tracking, real neat. So I was initially thrown off because, you know, like you move the cursor by moving your neck, you know, to look around. And there are not many situations in real life where you turn your head like that. Like, you know, like just kind of like, I could see doing that, bringing in a lot of fatigue as you're just kind of like, ooh, you know, like blah, lolling your neck around. I could see it, you know, eventually being really painful. Counter to that, if you're just doing mouse and keyboard with it and your field of view is changing, you've got this 3D effect, you know, you get motion sickness because your eyes are seeing something different than what your body is feeling. Mm-hmm. So if your eyes are, you know, look, you know, if what you're seeing is I am rotating in 3D space, but my body is standing still, that will make you kind of sick. So I think that's something they have to, you know, counter a little bit. You know, I'd have to play other games, you know, for longer to figure out what it is. But it's really cool. When you slap this thing on, look up at the sky and just kind of like, as it goes, like seeing, you know, and then recognizing, oh, I look like an asshole because I'm staring at the ceiling and we're like, wow, it's the sun. And it's like, no, that's a fluorescent light. You dipshit. And then looking down, you can see your body and stuff. But yeah, it's real neat. And then, so instead of doing the, you know, like free fall ride, Tower of Terror kind of thing, I found a forest. And because of the 3D effect, it's just kind of like, okay, I want to try and like navigate around these trees for a little bit. And like, it was so convincing that like my body was swaying a little bit, like as my equilibrium was thrown off. You know, not to be hyperbolic, in that sense, but the effect really worked. For me, it was more subtle than I expected it to be. It wasn't like the 3DS where they have like cutouts. You know, it's like a cutout kind of feel. Mm-hmm. It actually is like this really strange binocular 3D effect. Yeah. What else?
That's really cool.
Yeah, and then like hopping into the water and then like going up and like trying to see these squids from various angles. Then I went into a cave for a little bit. I was like, hey, you know, like what's the command to make it dark? And like, what? That'd be too scary. I was like, yes, scare me. It's like running around like, ah, yes, this is what I need. Yeah. So Oculus Rift, real cool. I don't know if I would buy one. You know, it depends on what the price is, games, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like as a piece of technology, it was something that, you know, I felt like I needed to experience firsthand in order to have a, you know, fully formed opinion on it. And yeah, I think it's neat.
Hmm. Very cool.
Yeah.
Now, just curious about the head tracking. Is turning your head essentially like moving a thumbstick in that, like, once you move it to the edge of the, you know, screen, quote unquote, or edge of the tracking, it'll turn right until you center your vision and it stops? Or is it actual head tracking that if I turn my head to the left and then turn it back to center, it'll look left and then look back forward?
I think that it depends on the game, to be honest with you.
Okay.
You know, like what they do. I don't imagine it would ever fully be, you know, one to one. You know, there would be some drift, but like if, you know, if I was in Minecraft and I wanted to turn around, you know, I'd like the most effective way, what my body told me I needed to do and what the game responded back said, yeah, that's the way to do it, was just turn around. So I was playing the game with my back to the laptop, you know, from where I started.
That's cool. Right.
So it's not like playing a first person shooter in the Wii where there's like a bounding box and then after you pass that certain point, it nudges it over. And then if you go back to the center, it stops. It is like, you know, if you look right and then you look left, your character is going to look right and look left at roughly the same angles.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it'd be really interesting to play Amnesia with it.
You tell me how that goes, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Any questions about the Oculus Rift? Because really, that's the end of what I've been playing.
Mm-mm.
No. Okay. So, and so, like, people go to these expos to buy stuff, and I really didn't see any like tchotchkes I wanted. I didn't see games, just kind of like, okay, I recognize I can pay cash for a game here. However, I would have to fly it back across the country, and I could probably get it for roughly the same price on Amazon. A little bit of the thrill of the hunt goes, but I wanted to buy something. So there's this guy, I don't think the guy was there, but, it's a business called, I believe, Wood Arcade, something like that. I need to make a look here because I actually do want to plug his business if possible because it's real neat. He does like sprites, except they are carved out of wood and like colored and lacquered, and they are like super pro. Like so what I got was, you know, the mask from Super Mario 2.
Which one? Yeah, that chases you?
Yeah, the flying mass monster that like shakes loose and then comes after you when you pick up the key. Well, I got one of that. So it's like 11 inches by 11 inches, like roughly spherical.
Nice.
I'll put a picture up on Facebook or something like that. But my plan at I believe it was Gary's recommendation is to put that up over my key hook. Yeah, but sweet. Yeah, that's, you know, real cool. Let me see here. It's really bothering me that yes, the Wooden Arcade, thewoodenarcade.com.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Dennis, how about you? What you been grinding on?
Yeah, I've been kind of exploring the humble indie bundle, the Humby Indie Bundle, as I like to call it.
as nobody calls it.
Yeah. But got to do some trying to co-op with Jala and with OMG Amoose.
Ah, yes. I got to hang out with OMG Amoose.
Oh, yeah. I said he's actually the one who sent me the picture of the Castle Crashers cabinet. So I knew he was out there. And man, that game is a lot of fun co-op between three people. Which, I mean, it should be. It's designed that way. But it was kind of funny starting out, just a couple fun moments from the game. You start out in the tutorial levels, and you're the wizard, and you're kind of learning how to be a wizard. And, the big thing I'm a wizard. But the thing the wizard can do is can, like, create crates. And I kind of accidentally did it without knowing what I was doing. I was like, oh, my God. I just created a crate. And Jala's like, oh yeah, that's nice. And then she proceeds to like create 30 of them right there on the screen. Like, oh, that's cute. You did that little thing here. Mm. This is how it actually works.
Baby's first miracle.
Yeah.
Title.
Oh, I think so. But it was interesting because she was playing with a very heavily leveled up character, whereas I was playing with a complete newbie character. And the game actually remained very fun and balanced. Like I felt like I could contribute in meaningful ways, even though there was this big kind of power gap between us. So that was interesting. The other thing is just, you know, when everyone's running around, when there's three people, you're kind of locked into your character unless someone agrees to switch. Mm-hmm. So you really kind of learn to play a specific role. So I was playing as the knight for most of it, which has a big shield, which can deflect stuff and is the kind of primary melee character. And, I was, you know, hopping into a tunnel to try to deflect and protect myself. These things that were being shot at me, thought I was doing a great job until I realized that they actually reflect off of my shield.
Dope.
And I deflected it into OMG Amoose and, killed him while I was trying to protect him. So, sorry.
I'm doing this because I love you.
Yeah. So I fail at being the knight. But yeah, the world is just beautiful. It's the art is taken straight out of a storybook. And you could get lost just looking at the backgrounds as you're running through them. Cause everything is super ornate, super detailed. And has just a really, saturated color palette and, you know, it was a lot of fun to look at. So, it's easy to miss those things as you're, you know, solving puzzles and kind of rushing through with a group of friends. But it is cool to see that there was that level of care put into it, mm-hmm. Which is really nice. What else about that game? The puzzle solving, you know, was never too difficult, mostly because Jala actually knew the answers to all the puzzles, but that was fun. It was still fun. It was kind of like having a tour guide through the game. Like, hey, here's the flavor of the game, but I'm never going to let it get too difficult for you. Mm-hmm. So it was a ton of fun. It was just great to just, the more I do co-op gaming, the more I love it. And that's just, was a ton of fun to do that. So, I'll probably try to, if and when I continue to play that, always do it in a co-op format. So, hey, hit me up if you see me messing around on Steam.
Yeah.
Then the other humble indie bundle, game that I started playing was Limbo, mm-hmm. Which I think we've covered on the show at different points as people have played it probably back when it was still DTR. But man, that game has atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And just playing it with headphones on, the sound turned up nice and high, and there's very little sound in that game. It's very sparse, but every single piece of sound design in that game is perfect. Specifically like when they start cutting music in, after long silences, it just ratchets up the intensity so much. And I say music very loosely because, you know, oftentimes it's just kind of a buzzing, swarming, humming in your ears, that just conveys the hellishness of what you're going through so perfectly.
Yeah.
So that's been a really cool experience. Two kind of puzzle games that could not be more different. The first one, you know, this really storybook and saturated color palette. And then the other one is like, well, you've got your blacks and you've got your whites and, maybe some grays.
Yeah. And like a shitload of depth of field.
Yes. Oh yeah. That stuff is pretty cool. And that's always neat when something in the background that you don't expect to move starts moving. And you just, I didn't even notice that because it was so far back in the depth of field, but hey, it is a part of this world that I'm interacting with.
Mm-hmm.
Also, every time you see a white butterfly, it's a trap. You're about to get the crap scared out of you.
Oh man, run the other direction. Don't ruin that for people.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
I'll leave it in, but you know,
yeah, it's a,
By the time you get to the point where that happens, you're going to have forgotten this.
Yeah, yeah, because you get a memory like David. It's about 1.5 weeks.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
So that's been cool. I mean, everyone says that kind of the opening segment of that game is the strongest. Mm-hmm. But I actually liked the segment after that better. And I don't know. Again,
was that the village?
I guess, yeah, you could call it the village where you're kind of interacting with, there are other people,
mm-hmm.
kind of, who, you know, you quickly realize they're out to get you. But like that whole segment was, I don't know why I liked it better than the opening. Cause the opening is incredibly strong.
Yeah.
David, do not play this game. Yeah, that second part where just there was go ahead.
That was just my 5 second delay of getting the joke.
But I guess to move from that to the second segment where this isn't just this primal rage type of thing coming after you. It's
you mean the dinosaur fighting game?
Yeah. But you know, there's actually like intelligence and intent that's out to get you as well. Was really good. So
yeah.
Yeah, Limbo. Check it out. But yeah, it's
the 90s segment of the podcast.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Hey guys. Yeah.
But yeah, I've been playing some other things, but I'll talk about it later week because I've really only dipped my toe into it. But Kingdoms of Alamur?
Kingdoms of Amalur.
Amalur.
The Reckoning. Yeah. The game that bankrupted Rhode Island.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, I guess Kurt Schilling like has just started like auctioning off his stuff. So that's one of those few games that the story of its creation will always be more interesting than the game itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is unfortunate because it was a pretty good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll you know, later weeks I'll have more to say about it.
Speaking
I'm sure.
of R.A. Salvatore, actually.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in the dark about this story. What's the story behind this game?
The overview behind it. So Kurt Schilling, a baseball player who wanted to start a game company. I think he baseballed up in the Northeast. And Rhode Island was actually offering like a tax rebate to like new studios that started up there. So they formed this studio. I forget what it's called. And they put out this game, and it's successful, but not like as successful, like enough to like recoup on the investment. They, you know, and then the loan from the state comes due. I'm probably fucking this up. I apologize if anybody knows this better. The loan from the state comes due, and then, you know, they can't pay it. So the studio has to go down, and then like Rhode Island was left like holding the bag.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Just a real, a real instance of that kind of thing going as wrong as possible.
Yeah, no one really winning.
Yeah. I mean, except for the people who really enjoyed the game, which I know that there are people who enjoyed the game, so. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. They were trying to make it into an MMO, too. Like, they were going to do, like, a whole, like, transmedia, takeover thing. But because everyone wants to know what's going on in Amalur.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
And I'll find out more about what's going on there.
Yeah.
And maybe even learn to pronounce it by next week. It's been that kind of week for me. Nothing's coming out quite correctly.
That's fine.
More on that later. But for now, it's two really cool indie games that could not be on more opposite ends of the kind of tonal and color palette.
Cool. Yeah, I want to check out Trine. I've got it. I own the damn thing. Oh well, I just need to find time to play a game.
I know. Problems.
Problems. You guys want to button it up? Cool. I heard Ben agree, so we're good.
Damn it! You said you guys. Though.
I tricked you.
Got him.
So thank you so much. That was episode number 37 of The Level. We're so happy that you could join us. What can you do? Well, you can check us out on Facebook. That's facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. Contribute to the conversation. Usually we do a multiplayer prompt. If I wasn't sick, and also if I wasn't up until 4 a.m. last night, I would have had the energy to like do a thing. But I didn't have the energy to do a thing, so... Oh, well, let's see here. There's also, duckfeed.tv/TheLevel, where you can find, the episodes of the show, find out more about how to, enjoy things that we say. You can like us on, blah, blah, blah. What am I doing here? I'm losing it, you guys.
iTunes. Follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, follow us on
Twitter. That doesn't come until later.
So I'm just going to speed through this. iTunes, leave us a rating or review. It's been a minute since we've gotten one of those. Those really do help us out. So anything I'm missing, you guys?
Cole, by the tone of your voice, it sounds like you just got done playing Limbo.
Sorry. Oh, there's the tip jar. It's just duckfeed.tv/tipjar. We changed the donation structure just a little bit to take advantage of things that our web provider does. Should be a little bit easier that way, but there are still the previous options. We don't want you to give money. Just using the Amazon link is more than good enough. We get a little kickback from that. Doesn't cost you anything. Other than that, you can just like us on Twitter, follow us on Twitter. I am at Cole Ross, KOLEROSS.
I'm Dennis Furia, at D Furia.
I'm David. I'm Dave Mysmith at MoneySmith777.
Fake out. I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Awesome.
I was just like, it's like, I'm David I am Kane, the Enduro Man.
Remix. Oh, well, thank you so much for listening, everybody. Yeah, but my voice is nice and silky smooth because of my various ear, nose, and throat problems. So that is good. Yeah. All right, let's jump into it, fellas.